I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Later in the hour, the barbershop quartet, the Cape Cod Surf Tones, join us. But first, one of the many things that make the Cape Coast and Islands so special is our wildlife. We have a variety of mammals, birds, and amphibians. Unfortunately, human-induced activities can injure and sicken wildlife. Fortunately, there's a place that will care for these animals. There's a couple of them, but today we're talking with WildCare in Eastham, which has a mission to rehabilitate sick, injured, and orphaned wildlife. And Stephanie Ellis is a wildlife rehabilitator and the executive director of WildCare. Welcome. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm excited to be here.
So you rehabilitate smaller animals, right? So who do you take in?
Sure. So we take in all birds, reptiles, and also small mammals. So the largest mammal that we generally see is an opossum. Mm-hmm. And that's simply because we don't have the facility space. We have a very small facility, mm-hmm. so we don't have the space to accommodate the larger animals like fox, coyote, skunk.
So what do you do with them?
So those animals, when we receive those calls, they're either referred to local animal controls, or if they need care, we refer them to the Cape Wildlife Center in Barnstable. Mm-hmm.
So we got a nice balance here then, right? So someplace for all of them to go. So what are the most common causes of illness or injury that you see?
Sure. So the top three reasons that wildlife are brought to us are outdoor cats. And I know some people will be upset with me, but outdoor cats kill over 1 billion birds a year in the United States alone. So we see a lot of cat-induced injuries. Also, habitat disruption, mm-hmm. so cutting down nesting trees, mowing your lawn or disrupting the habitat in some way. And then also hit-by-car injuries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how many animals do you take in every year?
So I used to say 800 to 1,200, but this year was, 2017 was a banner year. We took in 1,716 animals.
Wow.
Yeah, huge year.
Generally, how long do they stay? I guess it depends on the injury, but, you know, do you keep them for a long time?
It depends on the injury, for sure. Orphaned birds, for example, you know, they grow very quickly and fly, mm-hmm. Learn to fly very quickly. So sometimes that's a matter of a few weeks. Whereas if you have an animal like a snapping turtle that's been hit by a car, it sometimes takes up to a year for their injuries to heal. And that's because they're a cold-blooded animal with a slow metabolism. And so everything about them is slow, including their healing time.
Mm. Is there a time of year that you tend to see more injured or ill animals?
Yes, I would say the summer, so June through September, that's when everything is out and about breeding, looking for mates, looking for nest sites. And so animals are getting hit by car, but also there's more people on Cape Cod. And so people are out there finding the animals. Yeah. So the bulk of our patients come in during those busy summer months.
What are the state or federal guidelines for wildlife rehabilitation, both in terms of who can possess and care for them and then the protocols for care and release?
Sure. So all of my animal care staff, we are licensed wildlife rehabilitators. And that means that they can have wildlife in their possession and also that they meet criteria for rehabilitating animals, temporarily in their care. Also, WildCare, we have state and federal permits. So federal permit allows us to rehabilitate migratory birds. Mm. And you actually have to have, if you're a rehabilitator and you say would like to rehabilitate songbirds on your property, you need your Massachusetts state license. You also need a federal permit because you're working with migratory birds. And you also need an inspection of your home or facility to make sure that you have adequate aviary size. There are a lot of regulations.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, fantastic. It's to prevent people from finding a baby bird in their backyard and, you know, starting an owl pet shop.
Yeah.
Or
Well, and that's, an important point of it is you're trained in how to rehabilitate these animals, and where the rest of us, we wouldn't know these things. We're like, we would treat it probably like a pet, which is, you don't want to get that close to it, right?
No, you don't. And what happens is, you see a lot of these stories on the internet of people having pet squirrels and they're so cute. Well, most people will find babies as animals and they are as baby animals and they are adorable, but they grow up. and they begin to exhibit adult behaviors and behaviors that are not appropriate for us to have.
Right. And you're not doing the animal any favor, because at that point, it's so used to being domesticated that it probably wouldn't make it if you let it go.
Exactly. And that's what we're all about, is rehabilitating wildlife and releasing them. And we want them to be capable of independent survival. Mm-hmm. We don't want them imprinted on people.
Right. If you have questions this morning, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So what are some of the species you've cared for over the years and the ones that you see regularly? I would imagine squirrels. You mentioned birds. These are kind of regular customers, right?
These are regular customers, yes. In these winter months, we see a lot of seabirds because we now, you know, we have birds that winter here from more northerly areas, like our alcids, which are the razorbills, the puffins, the dovekies. We also see a lot of sea ducks this time of year, and two different loon species. And so we don't see as many songbirds at this time of year. However, birds are going to, you know, they're about to start breeding. Mm-hmm. And so we'll start seeing more songbirds, also the small mammals. Lots of squirrels and even mice.
Yeah.
We rehabilitate mice, believe
it or not. You love mice.
And I personally love mice.
So here's another. I want you to tell the story of the snake. You have a snake. You wouldn't think this time of year you would get a snake.
I know. It's the strangest thing. The recent storm that we had on Cape Cod that caused widespread flooding, someone found a black racer. And he's over 5 feet long. He's a big snake. And he was found rolling down a bank at a beach in Eastham, and his tail was badly injured. And we're not sure if that was because while he was brumating, which is the hibernation for reptiles, perhaps his tail was exposed and it was frostbite related, or perhaps he was dug up and injured, and whatever the cause, his tail was infected. So we got the snake during the storm. And we ended up cleaning up the wound. It needed to be sutured. And he is with us, and he's in WildCare's day spa, you know.
That's funny.
And normally he'd be brumating. Like I said, he'd be, you know, under a mulch pile somewhere for the winter. But instead, he's eating, he's nice and warm, and he's doing really well. We expect to release him in the spring.
So, do snakes have personalities? I mean, I've never really had any interaction with a snake. I mean, you can see its personalities in some of the animals, but what about snakes? Does he have a personality?
he definitely has a personality. I have to say, I was the one who admitted this snake, and he was quite calm. You know, he was hypothermic. He was cold when he came in and injured. But even I could even see just in the next couple of hours from warmth and fluids, you know, he was getting a little lively. and so they do have different personalities. It's fascinating. Yeah. Fortunately, most patients, we don't have them around long enough to, you know, just
to really get to know them.
Really get to know them. But yeah, we'll have them all winter, so I'll have to check back with you.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to hear about that. So how do you determine if an animal has been orphaned or if it's an adult will return for it? You know, in the spring, we're going to see, you know, especially with the baby birds. Mom's probably pretty close by.
Yes, Mindy, I am so glad that you're asking this, because we start seeing baby birds at the end of May, and we receive a lot of calls. And what I usually tell people is, if you find a baby bird on the ground, if it's fully feathered and seems active, bright and alert, keep a distance and watch for the parents. You'll usually see them coming and feeding the bird, you know, within 20 to 30 minutes. If you don't, that's when you might want to call us, and we will consult with you. We provide live counseling over the phone. if you see a baby bird on the ground and it's what I call naked, blind, and helpless, you know, pink, no feathers, that bird is going to need some help, because the most critical thing is they can't thermoregulate in that stage when they're blind and naked. So they will need warmth and support. So in that case, we would either say to get it back into the nest if you can and watch very closely. The parents would need to come back immediately, or we'll have you bring it into us at WildCare.
So what do you do if you discover an injured or sick animal? You're talking about a bird, but maybe, you know, you've hit a rabbit with a car or, you know, something. What do you, you know, sometimes these animals, they might, you know, attack you. Not that, you know, a rabbit could have pretty sharp claws, but so what do you do? You know, you've got this injured animal and you want to help it, but how?
Yes, sure. So I usually tell people it's a great idea to have some blankets and some heavy gloves and a towel in your car and a box. And then what we usually do is, first thing is your safety. You know, don't get out in the middle of busy Route 6 if you're going to get injured. But if you can throw a blanket or a towel over an animal and wear gloves, that's your best bet. Then you can scoop them up and put them into the box and make sure that the box is secure. But certainly there are species where we do not, we would not encourage the public to handle them. And an example of that is a great horned owl.
Yeah.
That's a large and very fierce bird that could inflict injury. Also mute swans, mm-hmm. very large, aggressive bird. And certainly any of the larger mammals. If you have an injured coyote in your backyard, I am not going to ask you to scoop it up and put it into a box.
No, right.
We have a trained group of volunteers who do rescue, but also our staff go out for many of the more challenging rescues.
So many of the animals you rehabilitate are not threatened or endangered, and some might even consider them pests. I'm thinking squirrels or mice. So what's your response to someone who thinks resources could be better spent on saving species at risk?
Sure. I love this question because our motto at WildCare is that every animal matters. And when I think about, I mentioned earlier that we received 1,716 animals last year. And looking at those numbers, 47.44% of those animals were impacted by people. Those are known impacts. So we know it was hit by a car. We know it was shot. That doesn't even represent the unknown. And this is just one small wildlife hospital in the United States. And I'm saying that 50% of our animals have been hurt by humans. So to me, that alone says this is our responsibility to do something for these animals. And as rehabbers, we're on the front lines. So we're learning about the impacts. And then we can use that information to educate people to mitigate and reduce the impacts.
All right. So since you mentioned hunting and animals being shot, we have this controversial coyote hunting thing that's going on now. Hunting is also part of the state's wildlife management strategy. Almost all species of mammals have a season in the state, including coyotes, raccoons, deer, turkey, squirrels, and fox. We should mention that owls and eagles and hawks, along with some other migratory birds, cannot be hunted. Some Cape Codders are avid hunters. Others are opposed to hunting. So what are your thoughts on it?
So for the coyote contest that's happening currently, not happy with that contest. It is hunting for sport, which I personally don't understand. But also it's known scientifically that hunting coyotes for even population control is not necessarily effective. You know, we have a rat population and a problem on a large part of Cape Cod. And if we reduce the coyotes, our rat population will probably boom. And then coyotes are able to actually expand their litter when there's years of high food availability. So essentially, we might be creating more coyotes by doing this. But, you know, politics and everything aside, I'm not a fan. And I'd say WildCare is not a fan of hunting for sport. Yeah. We see the aftermath in our clinic.
Right. You mentioned rats. I want to ask you about that because this has an impact on other, and you probably see this, you know, you have a rat problem, you call in the exterminator and they, or you put out poison yourself, the rats get poisoned and then somebody eats it and you have a problem.
Yes.
You're impacting other animals. Maybe you didn't mean to.
Yes. Rodenticides are a huge problem across the United States. And those are the poisons that people buy to poison mice and rats. And what happens is a lot of these poisons are anticoagulants. So they inhibit the blood's ability to clot. So what's happening is animals bleed out, which is not a very humane death. But for us, what we're seeing is raptors that have eaten these poisoned rats or mice, they now have secondary rodenticide poisoning. And so we're seeing massive bleeding, anemia. It's painful to see, and it's also a very long treatment process. So I do not recommend, I highly discourage rodenticides and also glue traps. Mm-hmm. And exclusion really is the answer, which means finding out how they're getting in and closing that off.
Now, I did hear an exterminator tell me that there is some new type of poison that they use that is slower working. So it takes longer, I guess, to kill the rats, but that it doesn't impact the animal that might eat the rat. Do you know about that? Have you heard of that?
I have heard of that. I am not that familiar with it, but I did hear that the animals metabolize it more quickly. Mm-hmm. The animals that are poisoned, and therefore other animals that consume them, are not impacted. Again, I'm not so sure I feel good about poisoning anything. Mm-hmm. I hate to say that snap traps, I think, are much more humane, set up safely so your pets don't get into them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely hate poisons, and mainly because, again, I'm on the front line seeing it every day. Yeah. And seeing the illness.
Are there ways? I think I saw some kind of a trap that for mice that actually catches them inside something, and you can go let them go outside. Or does that
yes.
work? Does it work?
It does work. Rodents are super smart, I have to say.
And who knew? I just realized that recently. That rats are smart, can be smarter than cats and dogs. It blows my mind.
Yes, it's unbelievable. I have mice as pets, and so I know they're incredibly curious, inquisitive, friendly, and very intelligent. Yeah. And lots of fun.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Stephanie Ellis, wildlife rehabilitator and the executive director of Wild Care. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Caroline's calling from Orleans. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Mandy. Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Hi, Caroline. Good morning.
I just had a comment kind of to follow up on what you were saying about the traps, which is, I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what I'll call preventive rescue, as in educating people about not cutting down dead trees, not removing brush piles, to try to stem the tide, as it were, to try to prevent these things from these interactions from happening in the first place.
Yes, thank you. That is a great question. So we usually recommend that people reserve their tree trimming and their pruning for the fall and winter months. So generally September through February. Otherwise, you begin interfering with nesting season. And I can't tell you how many animals we receive because they were in nests of trees that were cut down. That's primarily how we receive orphaned owls in the summer. The tree was cut down, and because they're a cavity nester, no one was aware. The other thing I like to tell people is, so birds are getting busy and thinking about nesting now. So I tell people, if you have boats that are shrink wrapped, check on the inside of the shrink wrap. If possible, discourage nesting attempts, but also your grills and your lawnmowers.
Oh.
Those are great nesting spots for mice and even birds sometimes if they can get in there. So I tell people to now start checking your grills and your lawnmowers and start moving them every couple of days and make that an inhabitable place.
I have a question for you. Sometimes I get mice in the shed, and somebody said peppermint oil, and we've tried that. But then I was reading online that it doesn't always work, but it seems to work. You know, they don't seem to like the smell of that peppermint oil on the cotton balls.
That's very true. It works in confined spaces.
Oh, okay.
So I would say, if you have a large open room, it won't be as effective, but certainly in a shed or in another confined space, peppermint and then steel wool.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like the feel of steel wool, and they don't like it on their teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So they generally won't chew it. So if you close up areas, stuff it with steel wool and peppermint. And your house will smell great, too.
You have a lot of great success stories. So tell us about the screech owl from Falmouth.
Oh, yes. That's a wonderful story. So in April of last year, we received a screech owl from Falmouth. A family had been watching this owl for over a year, and she had a nest box and eggs. And in the morning, they found her on the ground, completely disoriented, with several eggs broken around her. And they quickly came to the conclusion that a raccoon had tried to get into the nest, and she was badly beat up defending the nest. They took the box and the bird. There was one egg left in the box. They brought them all into us, and we quickly noticed that she had a bad eye injury. We allowed her to sit on her egg, which we think it was not viable, but we think comforted her during her stay because it was a natural behavior in a very unnatural setting. To make a long story short, we had a wildlife veterinarian take a look at her eye, and she did have some vision in that eye. And being an adult owl, they can often do well with one eye because they've already had the world experience of hunting. Mm-hmm. So she ended up getting really strong, feisty, eating, attitude, into the aviary, and she did really well. So we ended up giving her back to this family, the McCumbers in Falmouth, and they put her up in the nest box, and you can actually look on our website and see photos.
Oh, that's great.
Not only is she there, but her mate returned shortly after.
Wow.
It's a wonderful story. That's a great story.
So how do you identify if an animal may have cognitive impairments that would prevent it from succeeding on its own?
Sure. So I have an example. We had a red-tailed hawk, a rodenticide poisoning, severe case, had to have over 2 months of treatment with medicine to reverse the debilitating anemia. This bird became incredibly feisty, difficult to handle. We were hopeful. We put the bird into our aviary and quickly noticed that he was not exhibiting normal behavior. We did put live mice, not our patients, by the way. Just want to clarify that. Live mice into the enclosure because we wanted to make sure this bird is on his game. He's
right.
A hunter. And so he just did not recognize the movement of these prey animals. And we set it up. We set him up in situations where it would be so obvious, you know, for him to go for this prey. And he just could not recognize. And again, an animal that's difficult to handle. So not a candidate for an educational animal.
Yeah. So what happens when they can't be released? What happens to them?
So unfortunately, in the case of that bird, we made the humane decision to euthanize him. And that is what happens in wildlife rehab. You see a lot of death and a lot of loss. And I like to remind people, when you think about it, if you can capture a wild animal and bring it to a wildlife hospital, there is something very, very wrong. So we see very grave injuries and illness. And so because of that, we see a lot of death. And the animals that are not going to be capable of independent survival in the wild, we euthanize them. Mm. And we're actually required by law to euthanize.
Right. Let's talk to Eileen, who's giving us a call from Chatham. Hi, Eileen.
Good morning, Mindy, and your wonderful guest. Listen, I listened to your news wrap-up on Friday. It's when my first time I heard about the, quote, coyote hunt, unquote.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My husband and I really love these crazy animal shows that are on the cable. And one of the things a lot of them do for animal control is a volunteer vet go out and with a gun that anesthetized the animal. Mm-hmm. And while they have them anesthetized, someone else, another vet, I guess, does the spay or neutering of this animal, check them out quick, make sure they're healthy, and let them back out. It's going to stem the population growth without taking the life of the animal at that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, what happens, I think, then is nature takes care of the population in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered what you thought of that. When I see it happen, there's a woman on TV, oh, God, she's up in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And that's commonly how they control the population up there with some very large animals by, capturing them by an anesthetic gun.
Yeah, well, let's ask Stephanie what she thinks about that. Thanks, Eileen, for the question. Go ahead.
Thanks, Eileen. So I'm a wildlife rehabilitator and not in the field of population management. However, I have seen and read about circumstances where that works. And again, because the animal is not being eliminated from the population and therefore not replaced, so you're not creating more, and also they are not procreating. So I think in the long term, And I'll give a quick example. I was part of a squirrel spay and neuter program in California, where we had a problem with ground squirrels at a wildlife facility. We certainly weren't going to kill them. So we did a spay and neuter program, which ended up ultimately reducing the population and solving the problem. So from that one example alone, I think it's a fantastic option.
I would say probably costs a lot of money. Is it cost effective? I would think, I mean, unless you have somebody volunteering to do those spay and neutering procedures.
It's expensive and also requires, you know, there's the anesthesia, the veterinary time, the recovery time, staff involvement. You want to eliminate stress for that animal. It's a very big deal. It has to be very well thought.
And so for the center, what are the costs associated with rehabilitating these animals that you work with?
Sure. So it costs about between $25,000 a month to run WildCare during the busy months.
Wow.
Yes, that's for food, staff, and keeping the lights on.
Oh. And where do you get that money?
So that money comes primarily from the public, public and private donations. Also, we write for grants, and we have many events throughout the year that people can participate in.
Yeah.
We don't receive any federal, state, or municipal funding.
Oh, that's interesting. You talked about the fact that you see a lot of animals who do die. So how do you measure your success rate?
So we measure our success rate by the number of animals that are released. And for our 1,716 animals last year, our release rate actually came out to be around 47%.
Wow, that's good.
Yes, and I was absolutely thrilled because, well, some people may think that's low, but the national average for wildlife rehab hospitals is 33%, and the top facilities in the country are at 50%. And so I was thrilled. I mean, we'll always strive to be better. But when you're working with a diverse group of animals and such terrible injuries, I'm quite proud of my staff.
Yeah. So what can we do around our homes and in our neighborhoods to support wildlife?
So many things that we all can do in our everyday lives, including do not use rodenticides. That's the rat and mouse poison. Also, do not use glue traps for rats and mice. That is inhumane. We can keep our cats indoors. It's safer for the wildlife and it's safer for your cats.
Mm-hmm.
Nest boxes. That is a wonderful and inexpensive thing to do, is put up a nest box in your backyard for birds to nest in. Plant a bird garden in your backyard to attract birds, bird baths, brush piles. Don't cut down your trees or prune your trees. I know you want to do it in the spring because the weather's beautiful out. But I would say February is last call for doing such things because animals will be nesting.
Right. So the other thing I want to ask you about is animal intelligence. We think of them as, oh, these dumb animals, but they are actually, we just mentioned rats being very intelligent. So you must see this in the animals that you're caring for, that they are really a lot smarter than maybe we give them credit for.
It is unbelievable. I have to say, one thing I love especially about my job is you get to see animals exhibit all of these natural behaviors that we certainly could not teach them.
Mm-hmm.
For example, baby squirrels. You know, we'll get them in and it'll be very young, sometimes a day old. And then we see them growing up and burying nuts and, you know, climbing on trees or going into tree hollows and just exhibiting all these behaviors that we did not teach them.
Mm.
We provided them the opportunities. And it just reminds me of how incredible and how adaptive they are also.
Yeah. So you mentioned that snake earlier. How do you give a snake medicine? I mean, is it an injection? You make them drink? I mean, what do you do? And how did you know that?
Give a snake medicine very carefully. So we often use pillowcases with snakes. Works as a sack, and you can confine them easily. Mm-hmm. And then you make sure you know where their head is.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You get a hold of their head. And then this snake in particular is getting injections of medication into his muscle. And so it's very quick and painless. It's probably more stressful for us than it is for him.
And he's probably, when you release him in the spring, he's going to be like, no, I really liked it there.
I think so.
Yeah, and you're going to be giving a talk Thursday, 7 o'clock at the Falmouth Historical Society, and you're bringing along a rehabilitated Eastern screech owl. We'll have a link with information, about Wild Care and their upcoming fundraiser and Stephanie's talk tomorrow night at the Falmouth Historical Society and our website, capeandislands.org. Coming up after a break, the Barbershop Quartet, Cape Cod Surf Tones. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.